Blog Talk Radio.
Small businesses are the heart of the American economy. They're responsible for half of all private sector jobs. And they create roughly 70% of all new jobs in the past decade. Small businesses are not only job generators, they're also at the heart of the American dream. After all, these are businesses born in family meetings around kitchen tables. Born when a worker takes a chance on her desire to be her own boss. They're born when a part-time inventor becomes a full-time entrepreneur. Or when somebody sees a product that could be better, a service that could be smarter, and they think, well, why not me? Let me try it. Let me take my shot.
Welcome, welcome, people, Blog Talk Radio land. This is Emmanuel Neal. You are tuned in to the Business Coaching Corner. And I want to thank you all for tuning in. I am honored to have my friend and the guy that I've worked with. He's a well-seasoned actor and just has a lot of knowledge and good opinions about the business, the acting, the movie industry. Kevin, what's going on, brother? How are you?
Hey, how you doing?
I am good.
It's awesome.
I'm glad that you were able to make it. I know you got long days and, you know, you got a lot of stuff going on, so I appreciate you're able to take the time out.
No problem. I appreciate it. It was a long weekend, but it was well worth it.
Mm-hmm. Well, good, good. Well, let's jump into this. You're an actor in Indianapolis. That's where I met you. We worked on a project or so. And one of the reasons I let the audience know that I wanted to bring this guy in is because we've had some great conversations about the industry and where it's going at in Indianapolis and just individual actors. So it's been about a year since we've talked. My first question is, let us know what your background is. How long have you been acting?
I've been acting since I could walk. My mother was the choir director at our church, so I got drafted in everything there was to do. If it had a part for a kid, I did it. And then through school and then school, I did musicals and plays. I built sets. I did the lights. I did the sound. When I was in college, I took a few classes, and this is kind of where a key point of some of the things that we'll talk about. I was working with, it was all theater people that didn't have acting for the camera at college, and I didn't identify with the other students. In other words, they were, they would be like, oh, this role, in the Hamlet or, whatever. They were all, I want to do this on Broadway or I want to do this here, and they were all like obsessive about doing this particular role or how to do this role or that role or, and I just didn't have that passion that they seemed to have. And I thought, well, maybe this isn't for me. I mean, I'm going to sit here and focus all my attention on something. And if I'm not that passionate about it, then their passion, I was using their level or whatever their viewpoint of it as a guide. And I thought, well, why should I be broke? I mean, because let's face it, you don't make a lot of money being an actor. You can, but generally, no, you don't. And so I thought, I'm going to pursue my love of photography, and I'm gonna let that acting thing go. And it always came up, just voiceover work for, radio commercials or, what have you. And the opportunity to work with Lawrence Fishburne on the movie Biker Boys really turned all that around. Here I was in Hollywood and I got the bug back. And I started to do as much as I could, whenever I could, got to be involved with independent stuff. And then a motorcycle accident that nearly killed me in 08. So it caused me to refocus. And so basically the last, I'd say, 8-10 years, I've really been focusing on my acting. And here in the last year especially.
Mm-hmm. You said a bunch of very interesting things. My father was also a choir director, and I participated in choir. I've also participated in some plays, so that's an interesting connection. I think I vaguely recall you telling me about your mom. And then about the Lawrence Fishburne, how was that experience working with him and that movie Biker Boys?
Well, you know, it gave me an insight to the to that. I hung out with all the people that were actually getting the movie done, as opposed to the talent. And meeting Lawrence Fishburne was really great because here was a guy that was working on three films, really, if you thought about it, because he was doing Matrix 2 and 3 while he was throwing money at Biker Boys. So he was flying back and forth between filming 2 and 3 Matrix and Biker Boys. And most of the money that was put up was his. But he still took time out to walk around the set and talk to all the guys who had showed up and the gals on bikes that had shown up and said, you know, that they had taken time out of their day to participate to make this, you know, make this film. So it really kind of is humbling. You know, you sit there and think, you know, well, this guy could be anywhere and he's standing here talking to me. Yeah, you know, he's a well-known actor. He's an A-lister actor, and financially secure, and he's taking time out of his day to make sure that everybody who's participating felt like they were actually involved. And he didn't have to do that, and he did, which I thought was awesome.
And apparently that made a great impact on you. I can see how that would make that impact, as well as, you know, motivate you and inspire you to keep moving forward when you meet somebody down to earth and, you know, they come around and just be that, you know, that guy. So that's awesome. That's a cool experience to have.
It is.
You go ahead.
I've had the opportunity as a still photographer. I worked at the Indianapolis 500 for 8 years. I did the promotional stuff for General Motors. I did the ad campaign for when the Beretta was the pace car. You work with all different people. Like, I met Paul Newman, but it was in the realm of racing cars. And as long as we were talking racing cars, we were fine. And that's what he wanted to be, you know. In other words, it was a conversation of acting. He didn't want to be I'm here about race cars. If I had brought up the topic of acting, it would have blown the whole. And that's when you start to understand that they're really hugely successful people. And then I'm gonna go back and define that term here in a moment. That are they're no different than anybody else. They're just regular people. They wake up in the morning, have breakfast, you know. They do their daily thing. You know, they walk the dog. You know, sometimes they have to pay people to walk the dog, but you know, they are they're no different. So, and it's awesome when you get a chance to meet people and you realize that it tears away this whole facade of they're different because they're visible or what have you. That they're just the same as everybody else. That's one of the things I think is the key thing about that drives me, you know, that I don't worry about that. I suppose it's somebody will say, well, this is a successful person. Well, what do you define as a successful person? And that's a problem. If you are doing something that you feel you're not a success based on what somebody else is thinking you should do as being a success, you'll never be a success. Because it's not, you know, hey, you don't have $15 million in the bank and a Bentley and what have you, you're not a success. That's crap. Those are labels. And if you live by those labels that somebody else puts on you, then you'll never be a success because there's a lot more of them than there are of you. So there is going to be a ton of their labels, and you'll never be able to put all those labels as a success on you. And somebody out there is always going to say, well, he's not successful or she's not successful. Well, duh. that's not, you know, if you sit here and think, well, this is what I think that I need to attain for yourself, a small goal, and say, okay, once I've done that, I can move forward to this and move forward to that and so forth. And that is what I consider successful. You'll always be a success. And
is that how you measure your own success? I mean, would you say, because you've been doing this a while, and would you say that your career is and has been a success? Is it still climbing? I mean, and I know it's been successful, but put that in your own goals and terms for me on your own personal success, because we're usually our hardest critics. You know,
well,
especially
yeah.
as artists.
Well, yeah, and that's one of the, in fact, my acting mentor, Jim, and I had this conversation, and I've gone back to putting this back into something that I could go back to and say, okay, this, the basis of it. And there's a really great book, if you ever get a chance to read it, it's called The Tao of Jeet Kune Do, and it's a book by Bruce Lee. And, yeah, we all think of Bruce Lee as this great martial artist, and he was. But one of the things that he distilled into stuff is that the water is the most powerful thing on Earth in terms it can sit in any container, yet it can penetrate rock and steel. I mean, so, it fits any situation, and yet it's so powerful it can destroy the strongest things on Earth. Be like the nature of water. One of the things that he talks about is that there is no perfection. There is no success. There's small little attainable goals. Okay, I'm gonna walk from here to there, for instance. I mean, I'm going to walk from here over to there and pick up a glass of water and bring it back. Okay, well, you succeeded at that. And it might sound stupid and so simple to say that, but everything you do is just like that. There is no, okay, I've attained this. Okay, well, now what's next? You know, so for me, my goal is always tomorrow to be better than I was today. And there's never ends. As long as there's a tomorrow, I'm always going to try to be better tomorrow than I was today. So I just keep looking at each thing that I'm going to do and think, okay, how can I do that better than I did it yesterday? And, and that's my success, and I don't get hung up. I'm so busy doing 18 million things that I never look back and say, "Oh, I was a success. I did that. I did it. It's behind me. I did it well. I could have done it better, but I did it. It's done, and now I move on to the next thing. I hope I've learned from it. You know, so I build motorcycles. I do acting. I do. You know, so I was talking with the director of photography on a project I was working on over the weekend in Nashville, Tennessee. And we were talking about how to make something work for a set. And he looked at me and he says, "You could do that?" I'm like, "Yeah." And he, what, you know, the skill sets. I said, well, I had an opportunity to learn from somebody who was really, really good at it. I am not a welder. I don't do it as a living. Can I weld? Yes. And he just kind of looked at me. He's like, all these things you know how to do. Well, because I had the opportunity to learn from somebody who knew how to do it. So I shut up and I learned, you know?
Exactly.
So it's just a tool in my toolbox that I now have. And it goes back to that success. If I were to say, hey, I'm a successful welder, no, I can weld. Why would I want to get hung up on trying to be that, you know?
Right. Especially when one of the things you mentioned earlier was it being a passion. And you also mentioned about how actors don't usually get paid a lot. Has that been a hurdle for you to keep pursuing this? Or is it, you know, you do it for the love, and if you get some money, that's fine. But otherwise, you're just doing this for the love. I mean, because, well, and part of the reason why I ask is I know a lot of actors get into acting, and, you know, ultimately they would like to go to Hollywood. They would like to be on the big screen or be on TV. you know, even if you're doing your YouTube shows or whatever, you want them to get picked up. You want, you know, you want further acclaim.
Okay, you just hit something. Okay, you said something really key there, acclaim. If your goal, and this is the problem we run into in acting classes and stuff, is that if your goal is to be famous, then don't take acting classes. Get a good agent, mm-hmm. get a marketing plan together, and be famous. Okay? The mm-hmm. Kardashians prove you can be famous without having any skills. I'm bashing the Kardashians by any stretch of the imagination, but the thing is that they really – it's like Paris Hilton. She's, mm-hmm. she's famous because her last name is Hilton. I mean, honestly,
right.
There's no we as a society, as a species, has made her successful in that regard because for some reason we bought into some marketing hype and the Kardashians and Paris Hilton and some of these other people who actually – don't have a talent of whatever we put upon them, because they're acclaimed, they're famous, they're well. If that's what you want to be, then you just go be famous. You don't have to, but it's short lived. You know, this is perpetuated by the media, and we buy into it. We buy the magazines, we look at, you know, whatever, and the hype, and we follow it. Now, if you want to be a great actor, then focus on skills. Don't worry about if 18 million people see you or if 18 people see you. Work on the skills. Make that so when somebody goes, oh, yeah, I saw De Niro do that, and I saw Kevin do it, and I got to tell you something. You know, honestly, they were awesome performances, both of them. Well, then I don't care if 18,000 people saw it or 18 people saw it. To me is, did I do the job well? Did I do the character right? And if the money comes, don't get me wrong, I'd love to get paid for it. Who doesn't? But I think the biggest struggle is that you have to own up to what it is you want from that career, which we'll talk about it in terms of acting. If what you want from it is to be famous, then just go be famous. It's not that hard. I mean, look, like I said, I just used two examples, the Kardashians and Paris Hilton. It's not that hard. You just need to be at the right place at the right time, take advantage of the opportunity, and become famous. It'll be short-lived. It'll be we'll go back to that, you know, 10, 15 years ago later, it'll be, you know, where are they now, people? But
that brings up
– Go ahead.
And I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but just moment, it brought up an interesting thought because part of the reason Paris Hilton and the Kardashians got famous is, yeah, they have famous parents' names, but they also had sex on camera. So it kind of leads me to how do you choose your roles, and are there roles you won't take? And let me even get a little bit more specific. You know, one of the actors that we've both worked with is David Beeman, and me and him had a few conversations, and one of his strongest sticking points is he would never put on a dress. And I understand that, you know, but what I would tell him is that, well, you know, there are plenty of great actors that did it, and, you know, they served their purpose and they didn't feel emasculated or whatever. Where are you on that thought process? Is putting on a dress out of the picture? Is it something you would do for the right role? Where are you with that as an actor?
That's actually like you're hitting like several points there, but we'll just kind of look at it from a point of doing a role that gives you a sense of it being emasculated or that is not, becoming. If you're hung up about image, then don't get me wrong, there's nothing wrong with having a marketable image and having something that says, all right, well, this is he's easily identifiable as this. And there's nothing wrong with that. It works for several people, but you look at The Rock. The Rock is, arguably the quintessential guy, you know,
you had to look at it and say, okay, here you go. But, you know, he played a very effeminate gay man in a movie, and he pulled it off, and he wasn't hung up about it. And do you think he looked that he left? You know, no. So it worked for the role for the film. And so he's not pigeonholed into this one thing. To me, I don't care. I'll wear a dress. I don't put lipstick on. Two Wong Fu, Digs for the Love, or Danny Newmar, or whatever that was. You know, that was awesome. That was awesome. And Patrick Swayze and you know, all these guys were doing this, and it was it worked for the role. I mean, that character, them walking around in 3-piece suits wasn't going to work. They were trying to.
Yeah, Wesley Snipes, Leguizamo. Yeah. I think they were.
Yeah, Leguizamo. Yeah, they was awesome. And so, if you're going to be an actor, you have to decide, okay, if you're not going to be open to those types of roles, you're going to be very, very limited. Very, very limited. Mm-hmm. And not only are you going to be very limited, you will be kind of labeled as hard to work with. I mean, you know, in terms of your, as from an actor for a talent agency, they're going to be saying, well, I'm not even going to submit this person. I'm not going to submit this person for this. They're going to be uncomfortable. And what you'll run into is that because a talent agent is going to be, they make money if you make money. And if they can't make money off of you, they're not going to submit you. They're not going to take it's the time out of their day to submit you for a role, you know, whether you're for a commercial or whether it's for an ad campaign or whether it's for a role in a film. If you're a one-trick pony, and that's basically where I'm going with that, if you're a one-trick pony, they're not going to waste their time with it. They'll say, oh, okay, well, it came up. Well, you know, but how many times can you do the same thing over and over and over again? You know, leave it to Beaver. That guy, you stop being Beaver. You know, no matter what he wanted to do for the rest of his life, they were going to see Leave It to Beaver. And that is a problem with child actors. You know, they get pigeoned into that. Well, it's the same thing. It's no different than, oh, I won't do these roles. I won't do that in particular. I can get behind that because there's a part that says, okay, well, I'm uncomfortable with the nude scenes, for instance. There are certain actors who will not do nude scenes at all, and there's nothing wrong with that. And if you choose, they say, for religious purposes, I don't want to play roles that are drug dealers, or, you know, that harm kids, or I never want to play a role like that. I have no problem with that. But at the same time, you also have to admit that by making that conscious decision, you just limited the type of roles that you will get. Because if as you're a director or a casting director, and you're looking at it and say, well, I can get, you know, Joe over here to play a child molester drug dealer on this film, and then next I got another project that he'd be working great as, the lead person, and if you didn't take that role, you wouldn't have opened up that casting director's eyes to the potential that you could have played the lead role in this other project. And there's nothing wrong with it, but you have to own the conscious decision that by doing that, you can't then say, well, I want to do that. Well, you don't get to make those decisions. You've just you decided that you won't wear a dress. That inflexibility has made you not welcome by certain people. They're like, I don't want to work with this person because they're just too difficult. They've just put too many constraints on my creative process. And that's essentially what you are. I mean, you are a set piece, for the lack of a better reason name. But you need to bring life to that character that they've given you. Otherwise, you are just another glorified setting. And if you are so rigid in what you won't do, and it's what we're talking about, it's what you won't do, then, you know, it becomes difficult. And in this market today, that, you know, it's so splintered, and your competition is so high. You need to really really take an inward look and say, okay, is there something, why am I not wanting to do this? You know, what about myself I need to, because you have to identify that as you, it's not the wearing the dress or what have you. It's the, you know, that inflexibility, where does that come from? If you're going to be an actor, you need to start exploring that stuff. That's what, for me, playing all these different roles, I had an opportunity, I was in Chicago filming a feature where I've got a small part as a mental patient, and I'm a big guy. I'm 6'1", 225 pounds, which I've lost weight since we've talked. And I'm playing the mental capacity of a 13-year-old, and I'm the one that gets picked on. Well, look at me. I always play the bad guy. I always play the killer.
Right.
I always play the heavy. I always play, and it was an opportunity for me to play this meek, mild character. And I needed to be, I loved it. It was great. I got to explore it a little bit. And
like Lenny and Mice of Men or something.
Exactly. And if you're not open to those opportunities, you're never going to have self-discovery, which is exactly what, I mean, that's what we all do as actors. Every role that we play is you're exploring a sense of yourself, because we're all people, but we're all the same. I mean, you know what I'm saying? We wake up in the morning, we want to get something to eat, we want to do something with our day, which was what we were talking about before, Lawrence Fishburne and all these people that are famous. They're no different than anybody else. And when you're playing a role, a character, those things are the same for that character that they are for you. Why is it that they're going about getting those things the way they are? And that is a sense of self-discovery because, you know, you've not done that. You know, that character did it. You haven't. So why not let yourself be open to it? And if you're not, then you're not really exploring yourself as an actor.
And excellent. I'm sorry to cut you off.
I could do this all damn day.
I know, and that's one of the reasons why I love talking to you, because you just have so many great insightful thoughts, and time always flies when you're having fun. We're down to 2 minutes left on the computer portion. If you all are listening and you're tuned in on the computer, you can call in at 213-943-3358. That's 213-943-3358. The computer portion will cut off in a few, but we'll have another 10-15 minutes to talk afterwards. So if you want to call in, maybe you want to ask a question, although I don't know if I'll be able to get you in for a question, but call in and you can hear the rest of the interview. We got about a minute and a half on the computer. I want you to give a shout-out to any of a project that you have been in this is what I want to ask. Where can people see your work at, real quick, while they're, before they get cut off online, where can people see your work and things you've been in?
Yeah, find me on Facebook, Kevin Alexander. My acting page is Alex Marshall, actor director. And then all of my film projects I do through Alex Marshall page. And because it's an odd to, it's my last name, Alex, from Alexander, and my middle name, Marshall, and my grandfather's middle name. So it's an ode to my grandfather. So Alex Marshall, and I do all my film postings, and my trailers and stuff are all on that page.
Okay, great. Yeah, I was wondering when you sent me your bio and I had Alex Marshall, I was like, where did this one come from? So I'm glad that you explained that for me. So great, check him out on Facebook, Alex Marshall's actor page. And like I said, I've worked with him. He's a great actor, has a wide range of talent, and as you've been listening, very knowledgeable and insightful about the industry. So if you get cut off, like I said, you can give a call in, 213-943-3358. So one of the things that we used to talk about often was the state of the industry in Indianapolis. And we used to talk about the lack or perceived lack of opportunities of talent coming and filming in the city, and you know, even things that were made by Indianapolis natives, and I can't think of the name of that movie that got actually kind of big but was filmed elsewhere, and I remember you had some thoughts on that. Where are you at now? What's the state of the industry right now, specifically in Indianapolis? Because I know that you were really kind of concerned about that when we used to talk about it.
Well, it's great that you brought it up. I had an opportunity. I drove up to Detroit. A friend of mine, Travis, did a film with Tom Sizemore, and I'm friends with Tom's brother, Aaron, and I what an opportunity to see Aaron and see Travis's film. So I drove up to Detroit so I could, you know, it was an opportunity to kill two birds with one stone, as they say. And Travis lives in Arizona, and that was the same problem they have there. It's a non-tax incentive state, and being that close to L.A., you know, everybody just hop, skip, the jump over to L.A. I mean, it's not like here. We do have the Chicago problem, you know, where, you know, what happens is you reach a certain level and everybody books out and goes to Chicago, and they go from Chicago to L.A., or they'll go to Atlanta.
Or New York.
And that's the mentality, is that if you're from a non-tax incentive state, and we'll say this real quick, that means that there's a lack of support from your local government to get productions made. And that means that, you know, big budget films, they want to take advantage of those tax incentives. I mean, and it's, we're not talking about a small amount of money. When you're talking about a budgeted film of $15 million, that's a huge, there's an opportunity for, you know, 10% of that could be saved right off the top in tax incentives. Well, it doesn't take a physical person really. Oh, you know, it's $1.5 million. Because of that, those lack of big budget film projects coming to you, you have to get creative. You have to get way more creative, because, you know, how do you get the talent in the project without those tax incentives? And it's difficult. It can be done, but it's difficult. And so that's why most people don't go for the difficult road. They take the easier road. Let's just go to where the work is. We'll go to Chicago, to Atlanta, to New York, to L.A., to Toronto. And those, that's the standard fare. I mean, that's what you, if you live in the middle of Iowa, you're not running around trying to be L.A. But the thing that's really changed things now is the Internet. Let me put this into perspective that everybody can wrap their heads around this for a second. We were having this conversation on set over the weekend. Kevin Smith made the movie Clerks for $25,000. He used his film equipment from film school. He had friends that were in it, and it's the film that broke him into the being a well-known director and an actor. And he filmed it in black and white, so he didn't have to do color correction, which cost a lot of money. It still cost him $25,000 to make that film. Today, $25,000, you could buy huge amounts of sound equipment, a really good HD camera, lighting equipment, editing software, you know, a computer for and you're done. You own this equipment. You can keep going, making film after film after film after film with that equipment. You know, I'm talking a singular project for that same investment. So we have a ton more cell phones. People are making really great videos with cell phones. They don't have these, you know, $25,000, $50,000 Red Dragon camera. They've got, you know, a $150 cell phone, and they're making really good videos with it. So the competition for people's attention, and that's what it is, it's attention, whether, you know, you watch a 30-second video or you watch a three-hour movie, it's time out of somebody's day, and whether or not they're willing to get into their pocket and pay for the privilege of watching your project, it's way high. I mean, you've got 18 million, the noise factor. We'd be in communication if you ever took communications and acting and so forth. There's this thing called noise. The noise factor is very, very high now. You have a blue billion people vying for their attention. And so why is your project better than their project? And if you're saying, well, my project is better because of your one, blah, 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 your noise. If your project is that good, if it gets noticed, you obviously want to self-market. There's nothing wrong with self-marketing. But if you're so busy telling everybody how great it is, maybe you need to step back for a moment and think that maybe it's not that great. If it was that great, everybody else would say, you know.
It's great. They would, exactly.
Right, exactly.
It's like calling yourself cute or sexy.
Right, right, exactly. It's like, you know, I've got no problem with self-promotion. I have to
recommend
it, that, you know, but there's a time when that has to go away and you have to stand on your own feet and say, well, okay, how does this stack up against, you know? And, you know, that there's nothing wrong with saying, like I said, that judging where I said, that, you know, I say whether or not I'm a success or not. I go on anybody else. But at the same time, you also have to step back and go, okay, did I do this as well as somebody I admire? If somebody I admire better than, then I'm working at making it a little bit, you know, that you have to set a little goal for yourself, you know, to say, okay, that I could have done that a little better. And you're always your worst critic. But this is all that also goes back to whether or not you're in front of the camera or you're behind the camera. It's you're always improving, and you always hindsight's always 20/20. But if you did the best you could with what you had at that moment, then knock it up and go to the next project. So it doesn't matter anymore whether or not you're in L.A. or you're in the jungles of Cambodia or you're in Moscow. It doesn't matter anymore. The internet has changed everything, and you don't have to be in L.A. You don't have to be in Atlanta. The advantages they have is that they are hubs of very successful or very informed, very connected, self-aggrandizing is the right word because that's not what I meant to go with.
They're very public for one. I mean,
because
people automatically look to those markets, so that's going to come to mind off the bat. You know, whereas a spot like Indianapolis might not be a landing spot for talent, meaning an actor actually moving to Indianapolis, as well as people looking for talent. And then again, with the tax incentives and everything that you were saying offered by the state or the city, it makes it harder. I know this was something that you were working on before. I don't necessarily remember if it was with an organization, but have the states been trying to become a little bit more friendly to the entertainment industry to attract people to make movies there, to make shows, to do what they need to do there? What was that one show that was an Indianapolis-based cop show, if I recall, at one point?
Yeah. There was a movie that was recently The Fault in Our Stars, which was written by an author.
Right, that was the one I was thinking about.
And it took place in Indianapolis. The storyline takes place in Indianapolis, and they filmed it in Pennsylvania because they had to. It actually cost them less to build buildings in Pennsylvania to look like houses that really existed in Indiana and Indianapolis. You wrap your head around that for a minute. You know, for just a second, just stand back. I don't care where you are in the world. That you know, your town. The story takes place in your town, and it was cost beneficial for somebody to film that film in another town and build the thing to look like the stuff that is existing in your town
Right.
This wrapper, it's like, okay, you can't, they already exist. You don't have to build it. It would just, common sense would tell you, wouldn't it be cheaper to film? No. They had so much tax incentive in Pennsylvania that it offset the logistics to just film all the stuff in Pennsylvania that looked like Indianapolis. That was when it really struck me very, very hard. That's when you understand that you have a government, if you have policies in place that are destructive to a business. And that's what this is. This is a business. The biggest word in the entertainment business are two words. But the biggest word in those two words is business. If you aren't making money, there's not a profit margin in it. There's no point in doing it. There's nothing wrong with the art of doing something. I'm a performance artist. I do this or whatever. But if you're not making a financial gain in it, then you can only keep doing that for so long. Otherwise, it just doesn't work. It's got to be
or it's a hobby. I mean, if it's not a business, not making money, and you're doing it for the love, it's a hobby, and you got to recognize and be real about that as well.
Absolutely, there's nothing wrong with that. Indianapolis's problem right now in Indiana, I'll use it. We have a governor who's anti-business. He can sit here and say he's pro-business, but that's crap. We've lost several businesses. He's pro-business for businesses he wants, and that is the problem. Is that you don't get to dictate what is best for your state. You need to look at for the role that we were talking about before. Would you or would you not wear a dress? Okay, you have to own that your decision is destructive, is self-destructive, okay? Mm-hmm. And that is a problem here. We have people who've got blinders on so narrow that they're so focused on this that they've missed, Bruce Lee. We'll go back to him real quick. You know, if you look up at the stars, mm-hmm. if you're so focused on that one particular star, you've missed all that heavenly glory. And that is, you have to be open to all that stuff. And that's one of the problems we are in the state is that and it scares people off. And unfortunately,
do you have unions within the industry that are trying to fix this or, push it through, push something through or anything?
Well,
or is it something that y'all just kind of said, okay, this is what it is and we'll do what we can do here, but we may have to travel or we may, or just be independent.
Yeah.
I mean.
Well, yeah, we're organizations. There are several underlying organizations that are trying to get taxed, and they're not all end all be all. In other words, you can do it. Obviously, Jeremy Travis got Tom Sizemore and Bogdanovich in his film without having tax incentives. So you don't have to have them. It helps, especially if you're talking about a big budget project like a Marvel Avengers movie is going to bring huge amounts of dollars to the table. And a tax incentive would go a long way to making that happen. But, it's electricity and water all flow to the least amount of resistance. And if you have a tax incentive, you have less resistance. If you don't have tax incentive, you have more resistance. It's not that hard. It's basic physics. And people are going to try and avoid a confrontation, and they want to work with where it's easiest to work. Hence the reason why people will go to Atlanta or Chicago or to New York or LA, because that's where the hub of all this stuff is going. So, it's one of those where if it happens, it happens. If it does, it doesn't. I'm going to move forward with projects here as much as I can and surround myself with people that are of like mind and move forward. I'm willing to travel. Obviously, I was in Nashville, Tennessee this weekend. I was in Chicago for a few weekends a while back filming, and I like to go to Detroit to watch a movie.
Hold on for a quick second. I hate to cut you off, but I'm looking at the clock, and we're going to get cut off in a second.
Yeah.
But I want to thank you for coming in. I want